Welcome to the Everyday Ministry Podcast, where ministers get together to discuss everyday ministry. I'm tired of running, running, running into the things that kill my soul. Tired of always swinging hammers at the love that makes me whole. I'm running. All the roads that lead to you, sitting off on a one-way train to a place where they know my name. Yeah.
Welcome to the Everyday Ministry Podcast. This is James, and I'm sitting here with my beautiful wife Sarah for the first time, and then Jamie Owens, not as pretty as her by any stretch of the imagination. And then on the other end of the camera, we have Daniel and Christine.
Christina. Yeah.
Christina.
My best friend's Christine. So, you know, if you get it mixed up, no worries. Okay.
Christina M. And we're going to have the joy today to just record a conversation about pastors' wives. And just really excited about that. We're going to kind of get more about who Daniel and Christina is here in a minute. But before we jump into that, Sarah, how is everything going your way?
Going good. Just working and cooking dinner and doing the whole wife thing. About it.
We had pork chops, in case anybody was wondering. Jamie, how's everything going your way?
Yeah, everything's going good with me. Had a good day at work. Of course, now we've kind of got this new tradition of ours. Seems like every time we get on here, we're watching the Braves game. So we got that going on right now. So, yeah, everything's going good.
The Braves are winning right now.
Yes.
And there's only one inning left, so maybe they'll pull it out.
Both of the times we've been on here, the Braves ended up losing.
Yeah, maybe we should cut it closer.
Yeah, that's right.
Everything's going good on my end. Almost done with the semester of school. I got one more paper left. It's about 17 pages, so it's not that bad. Sarah over here has to proof it, so she's probably disagreeing with that statement. But this evening, as I said a minute ago, we're recording this podcast at night. That's why I keep saying this evening. And we have the joy of Daniel and Christina M. to record with. And Daniel and Christina, if you would, just go ahead and introduce yourself and just tell us how everything's going on your end of everything.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, it's great to be back with you guys.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. So I serve as the director of church multiplication with Lifeway Leadership at Lifeway Christian Resources. I lead a ministry called newchurches.com, resourcing church planting, multi-site multiplication. I also serve as a teaching pastor at my church here in Nashville. And yeah, that's a little bit of me.
All right. And like Sarah, I do the wife thing, the cooking and the cleaning and many other things. And we also have three kids to take care of and make sure that they're alive every day. So it's a big job in itself sometimes. Yes. We have three kids. Victoria is 8, Adeline is 7, and Makarios is 3. Mm-hmm. And we're so excited to be on this podcast. Thanks for having us.
Well, I'm super excited to have you guys on here. We actually had Daniel on here back in, I want to say it was October, maybe November of 2017, when we did our church planning month. When I say month, it actually turned out to be a month and a half. But we had Daniel on here. We talked about just church planning and really the podcast about the church planning podcast and church multiplication.
Yeah.
Podcast that y'all do. And so really awesome to have you back on here with us. And since the last time Daniel was on the podcast, they've actually started a podcast between themselves, and it's called the M Between Podcast. That's an IM.
Our last name.
If real quick, before we get into anything, just tell us quickly about that, if you don't mind.
So this really was, and we're going to get into our relationship in ministry, mm-hmm. and how we've kind of partnered together and done ministry together. But it's how in regards to that, there's been a little bit of a hiatus since having kids. Our oldest is 8 years old, and mm-hmm. and ever since Victoria was born, there's been a little bit of Christina, are you going to go back to social work? Are you going to continue to stay at home? And it's just been something that we've prayed about over the years. This past Christmas, I was speaking at a conference. We were there together, and they did a Facebook Live of us just kind of promoting the session and promoting our workshops. And after that, we were just debriefing over in our hotel room and talking about the experience. And we were like, well, why don't we start a podcast together? That was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was really fun.
So it literally was a, let's just do it. I know how to podcast because I have two podcasts at work. And
I know how to talk.
Yeah, you're really good at talking. So so it's just like, let's try it. Let's try to be an encouragement to marriages, to parents, talk about faith. The coolest thing about our podcast, actually, and I hope you guys can check it out, but the coolest thing is that we have our non-Christian friends who are listening to it too. Mm-hmm. So for us, that was a big heart for us in being evangelistic and in sharing our faith. And as much as we do talk about our faith and our relationship with God on the podcast, it's just cool to see how, yeah, the reach is kind of broader than those who confess Christ as their savior.
Mm-hmm. Listen to the podcast and I've really enjoyed it. And one thing that really got my attention was the very first episode y'all did. And the title of it was Double Chins and Getting Older. I don't know for a better way to start off a podcast than brutal honesty. So,
yes. Have you been doing your exercises?
Occasionally here and there in the car.
Yeah. I can tell. Look at that slim chin. Yeah.
Especially when I eat a burger for lunch and I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have eaten that. Better exercise on the way home.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to plug that more at the end and all of that. And I'm just really excited to have you guys on here. And as we get into the conversation itself, I didn't put this on what I was going to tell y'all we were going to ask. So I'm going to tell you what it is, and then I'm going to allow you to tell us your testimony. And then I'll come back to that question. Is one question we always ask on here is, what is an everyday minister? Daniel, you've already answered. So if you want to just skip it and like make the people go back to the old episode, you can.
Let's do that.
But as we get into the podcast, though, if y'all could just begin by just telling us a quick story of how you come to know Christ as your Savior.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you start?
Well, I feel very blessed in terms of like a Christian heritage, and let's say it like that, in terms of my parents became Christians when my brother was 2 and I wasn't born yet. He's 5 years older than me. And so I was born. My parents literally say I was born to the church because my mom had me. And then the week later I was at the church service and she jokes that I've never missed one since. And so I think
you've missed church services.
Don't, my mom's going to listen. So, I mean, I say it, it's a blessing. And also sometimes it's a little bit difficult just because I feel like for me, it was sort of a church culture. And I did receive Christ and asked him into my heart at age of 7, was baptized at the age of 8. But I just saw it more of, this is what my family does on a Sunday. And then we go on Wednesday and I memorize scripture so that I can earn a candy when I tell my teacher. So it was probably about when I was 12 years old. My dad actually had a brain aneurysm while I was away at Christian camp. And my grandparents came to pick me up and they were like, something has happened to your dad and we need to go visit him at the hospital. So it was about a 45-minute drive. I had no idea what was going on. We get to the hospital. My mom runs up and she's like, we need to talk. And she basically told me what happened is that my dad had a 5% chance of living and a 2% chance of ever walking again. So as a 12-year-old, that kind of completely turns your life upside down. I mean, it will in any age, but it's the summer before going to high school. So a lot of like, who am I? What do I believe? And I remember in my room that night and I opened my Bible and I said, God, I really feel like I have two choices here. One is that I'm going to run to you and trust you no matter what the outcome is. And the other option is I am going to run so far away from you and I want nothing to do with you. And thankfully, I chose the first choice. And that's really when I feel like I started to live out my faith.
Yeah, for me, it was like Christina, kind of grew up going to church. And I was like the first baby born in my parents' church plant. And I was kind of the youngest son and I have 3 older sisters, and the whole church was praying that my parents would have a boy. And I mean, it was just kind of, I had a lot of expectations growing up. I'd be in the Christmas plays, I would memorize scripture, I'd do all this kind of stuff. And I remember just really learning how to play the part of a Christian. Mm. It was in about fifth grade when I went to a youth retreat. I kind of tagged along with my sisters. It's funny because I was like, I felt so special that as a fifth grader, I was allowed to go with, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 graders to camp when none of my other fifth grader friends were allowed to go. And in hindsight, I realized, oh, my parents probably just coaxed the pastor into letting me go so that they could have a weekend without the kids. It's probably what really happened.
I'm gonna remember that one.
But I was happy. I was happy. And it was, you know, it was there where I truly, I for the first time understood what Christ did for me on the cross. I truly understood my sins and the just the depth of his grace and forgiveness. And I was really touched in that sense, just discovering how much Christ loved me. So that's when I committed my life to Christ. I really owned that myself. You kind of went on and off here and there throughout high school. And it was about 10, 11th grade when I really returned to the Lord. And I was like, okay, Lord, you know, the story, you know, we're doing an elevator pitch. The story's long, but, you know, 11th grade, 10, 11th grade onwards. Yeah, it was a lot better, but obviously there's been ups and downs throughout the years.
Well, guys, that's awesome. We just love asking that question as we interview different people, because one thing that I've found is that everybody's story is a little bit different, but it all has the same ending. Mm. It's, Christ coming and saving them from their sins and transformed life. So I think it's important to start there. So as I told you and warned you about, and y'all can decide amongst yourself who gets to go first, but how would you define an everyday minister?
Well, I've answered this question before. So Christina, why don't you go ahead?
And so whatever he said, I say now.
All right, next question. So very, very efficient.
No, would you, an everyday minister?
Yes.
Okay. I would say that an everyday is just kind of the integrity and the calling that God has given us, and it's played out and lived out, not just at church, not just in the building, but in everywhere that we go. I think in the word it says, like, we have the aroma of Christ. And so I think that's what it is too, that being able to share God's love and grace and mercy to everyone that we meet. And I know that sometimes I remember just being in ministry like 24/7, it's really easy to just be surrounded by Christians. And then you look and you're like, I have no non-Christian, how am I supposed to share my faith? I have no non-Christian friends whatsoever. And so I think if it as being an everyday minister is aware of that as well, that it's really easy to be with like-minded people, but God has not called us just to be with like-minded people.
All right, well, I'm glad y'all are here today. And I'm glad y'all get to help me as I learn how to do this whole co-hosting thing. But anyway, I'm going to start with you, Daniel. Can you just quickly tell us about the way that you've served in the church, what your role now is, in the past, whatever have you, the sizes of the churches you have served, as well as the length of that service? Just give us an overall view of what you've done in the church up to now.
Sure. Yeah, sure. So after graduating from college, I interned at a church plant. And it was a church plant that kind of became a house church and was trying to figure out its whole thing because the pastor had committed adultery. And so it was really kind of elder led. And I remind people, I was like, I was the intern pastor, not the interim pastor, even though I was the only full-time employee at that time. So it was quite the experience during that. So it was church plant, and we became that house church size. After that, we began serving in Montreal, and we were there for about a couple of years, another church plant. There are a few hundred, and I was leading the student ministry and also just helping the church start another campus and equip volunteers in their leadership and in becoming leaders and finding their place to serve. After that, we moved to Korea. We were there for a little bit under 2 years, and that church was, I mean, if you know anything about churches in Korea, it's mega churches are a dime a dozen. So I think that church with all of its campuses globally combined was about 50,000 people. Wow. Now, you know, you think 50,000 people, obviously that's not in one, it's not like you're renting out a stadium every single week.
It's not one service.
Yeah, yeah. So that's everyone all together. I was leading a multi-campus student ministry. So one of our campuses, it was probably 200 students, and it was basically every service had its, it was everyone kind of had their own service. So one of our campuses had about 200 to 300 ish kids. The other campus had about 100 ish kids. So I oversaw that. And then for the English ministry, I once again helped them figure out, okay, what does leadership development look like? What does it look like for us to equip volunteers and leaders? After that, we moved back to Canada. And we were at a church for about 4 years, though the church was about 3,000 people. And I was leading the groups ministry and then leading the adult ministry and doing campus pastoring as well for the church too. So then that's kind of what that was about 3.5 years ago. And 3.5 years ago, we moved down to Nashville for me to begin working at Lifeway. About a year after I started working at Lifeway, I began serving as a teaching pastor at our multi-campus church here in Nashville.
Well, Christina, I have just a question for you.
Yeah.
How do you serve in the churches? What different roles did you have?
Well, coming from what Daniel was saying in the beginning when he was the intern pastor, and I have to say the first sermon you ever preached at that church was Easter Sunday.
Yeah, I'm so glad. I'm so glad it wasn't recorded. I mean, I practiced so many times in front of you, in front of your mom.
Yes.
Like, it was just, yeah.
So my role there was encourager and clap really loud. No, but we served on the worship team together and helped, you know, lead the young adults ministry and helped out with the kids and whatnot that way. So we were engaged at the time. Mm-hmm. And then when we were married and went to Montreal, he was the youth pastor. And so I was working full time. But I would come to the events and on Sundays, yes, and I would help disciple the teenagers and the women leaders who were helping out with the teens. Mm-hmm. And then when we went to Korea, that's actually when they hired both of us. So both of us were part-time students doing our master's, and then part-time we were working with the youth, which I think is a completely different topic just because Daniel was and is my husband, but also he was like the main youth pastor and I was like...
She was on my team, so...
Right. He was like my boss, basically. And so that was really interesting. Yeah. Like, okay, are you saying really this as my husband? Are you saying this as my boss? And don't you dare be saying this as my boss. So yes, very interesting dynamic there.
Yeah.
And then when we moved back to Canada, Daniel was hired to be the group's pastor. And that was really interesting for me because all of a sudden, and we didn't know a soul there, none of our family was there. It was like, who am I? Like, we had two kids at the time and it was a new church and everyone wanted to go and introduce themselves to Daniel. And then I was like right beside him and I didn't have an official title, except I felt like my official title was, oh, and this is my wife. So that took, I mean, it is a really growing experience there. We can talk about later. And then through that, we started a life group together and was able to minister to different families through that. And then moving to Nashville, so it completely different way as well, because you are in full-time ministry, but not in full-time church ministry. So it's been really interesting to see our roles together through the church, local church that we're a part of. We help with a life group and lead one and disciple families through there. And as well as just really being a light in our community, we've really, really lived life and wanting to journey with both Christians and non-Christians in our community. And learning to support Daniel in full-time work in ministry, I guess, if you could say that. So lots of learning on my part, I guess.
Well, as we recorded this episode, I know it's we got it on here as pastor's wives. But as you just expressed, even since y'all have been married, Daniel served in different capacities as an intern. I'm sorry. You were both probably, though.
Yeah.
To
do whatever.
To yes, helping at church plant, youth pastor, and now you're a teaching pastor, correct? And
yeah,
so different things. So as we talk about this conversation and we have it, we really want to just kind of address the pastor's wife as a whole. It could be worship, youth, whoever it may be in the church, or senior pastor, lay mm-hmm. pastor. And so the next question I had for you is kind of, and I know it differs depending on the role, but what are some things that you can kind of just say that is the pastor's wife's role?
First of all, I have to say that I was so excited about being able to talk on this topic, because even, I guess, off the record or before we were recording for this podcast, James was saying, you know, we wanted to talk about this because we want to shed some light on it, and it's not really talked about as much as it should be. And I completely agree. There are so many times, I think, you know, going through all these different experiences where I was like, I wish someone could help me figure out, like, who am I? Who am I supposed to be? What role am I supposed to play? And so to answer that question, I think I want to preface it first by something that really stuck with me in college. And that was, I think everybody's asking the same question, like, who am I and what is my calling, especially in college? And I remember hearing a pastor talking about the difference between a primary calling and a secondary calling. So a primary calling is basically the same calling as a Christian, no matter what role you play or whatnot. And so, you know, it's love God with all your heart, soul, strength, mind, and love others, you know, as you love yourself, and as well as like the Great Commission, right? Go out into the world and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. So that's no matter who you are as a Christian, these are the things that we are called to do by God. And now where the second part is I think it's our secondary calling. And so it's, how are you living out this primary calling in your everyday life? So whether you're a nurse, a teacher, a stay-at-home parent, a firefighter, so you're still needing to live out that primary calling, but it's going to look different in what your secondary calling is. So as a wife of a pastor, what does that look like? I think our role is similar to any other wife. And biblically speaking, we're called to honor and support our husbands, like Ephesians 5, 22 to 24 says. But I think where it really starts to look different is the way we honor and support our husbands, because they go through a lot. Not saying that any other occupation doesn't go through a lot, but I think they're expected to do a ton. Whether they're great with people or not, I think a lot of things are kind of trying to work out disagreements. You're trying to figure out finances. People want to know what your 15-year plan or vision is. So you're juggling and doing, wearing a lot of hats. So I read this article that kind of explained how a pastor's wife could help out, and I love it. I just want to share a little bit. As pastor's wives, we can be counselors to help our husbands talk through difficulties with members or other staff members, a nurse to help heal emotional wounds, a listening ear for her husband to bounce ideas off of, and a cheerleader who encourages her husband to run the race of faith with love and integrity.
Daniel, you want to add anything to that?
No, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we Christina mentioned the, you know, the story in Korea where it was like, hey, am I her husband or am I her boss? And as a pastor and as the husband, it's, I mean, so much of life you can compartmentalize, mm-hmm. right? So much of life, especially when it comes to ministry, it's like, you know, the longer you serve, the more years you kind of get under your belt serving in ministry, the more you have to realize that there is never an end, mm-hmm. that you have to learn how to turn it off. And, you know, whether you're part-time or full-time paid, that, you know, you're always kind of full-time energy and full-time service and full-time focus, because it's always kind of in the back of your mind, and that's your role. And especially if you're a pastor in a smaller area, you are more known and more visible, and there's certain expectations based on where you're living and the size of your church, right? So when it, you know, the longer you serve in ministry, you have to realize, hey, I have to turn this off so that I can actually serve faithfully over the long haul, right? Mm-hmm. When I come home, I need to be able to put my phone aside and be present to my wife and to my kids. I need to play with them. I can't be at beck and call, you know, to everyone in the church because, hey, the church can find another pastor, but I'm the only father to my children and I'm the only husband to my wife. But the church can replace me. And if the church wants to replace me, they can replace me, but they're not going to have me at the expense of my family, right? So you understand that. And the more, I mean, there are great books that kind of talk about that. And I mean, Dangerous Calling by Paul Tripp is just it's a brutal book. Like, it is so brutally helpful and revealing and convicting and wonderful all at the same time. I don't know how you can kind of have all those, you know, adjectives in the same sentence, but you know, the book is a really good one if you haven't read it. So when it comes to, you know, my wife, especially when she was serving and being employed by the church, right? It was one of those things where the boundary lines were a little bit, they were fuzzy. They were a lot more fuzzier than normal.
Oh, they were very fuzzy.
Yeah, they were. Because not only was she on my team, but she was my wife. And whether the pastor's wife is actually serving and receiving salary from the church or not, I think every pastor's wife is in the same bucket. Mm-hmm. Right? It's, you know, whether you're getting paid or not, it doesn't matter. You still have expectations on you. You still have hidden expectations that your husband might be, you know, assuming on you and the church might be assuming on you. So it's just so, so important. I mean, I'm so grateful that you guys are having this conversation and that we're doing this podcast episode, because it's something that I don't think there's a silver bullet or one right answer to fix it all. But I mean, it's something that we need to talk about and we need to be aware of, mm-hmm. and we need to process and continue to process, because it's an ever-changing thing.
Yeah, well, you know, you mentioned expectations in there, and I kind of want to ask you, Christina, about this. What are some unrealistic expectations that many churches have for the pastor's wives? Whether, well, let's start with churches, but also in yourself, what's some unrealistic expectations that you can have in your role as a pastor's wife?
Well, I think that's awesome question. And I think every single, if you were to be able to talk to every single pastor's wife that, you know, even lived within your city, I'm sure they would have so much to say. And I think a lot of that would probably come from places of pain and negative experiences. I would hope positive experiences too. But to give an idea, I read an article that mentioned in North America, there is no other occupation besides probably the first lady in which a spouse is so defined by what her husband does. And so regardless if, like I was saying, your secondary calling, like regardless if you're a pastor's wife who is a nurse or a teacher or whatnot, you still have a lot of expectations that you are supposed to be in church, and not just in church, like present and helping and serving. And you better have a smile on your face too. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was really difficult because this is, I think, maybe our first or second year of marriage. We were having a really big fight, and we lived probably about 8 minutes away from the church, and we were expected to be there on Wednesday night. And we're driving, and you know, it's not like we're ending the fight. We are like in the thick of it. Yeah. And it's like, so you know, yeah. So it never happens to anyone else. I know. But, and I was crying, like, why is this happening? Or we're just huge miscommunication. And we pull up to the front of the church, and there's like the congregational members are standing on the stairs chatting and whatnot. And Daniel's like, well, here we are. I guess we need to finish this conversation later. And he got out, and he's very punctual, so he had to be on time. And I was like, I was so tempted to just grab my keys and jump in the car and drive away. I was like, I'm done. This is it. I felt like I was sick of pretending that everything was okay, even though, I mean, our marriage was fine, but we just had a really bad fight and I wanted to resolve it. And I didn't want people to be like, oh, Christina, like her eyes are so puffy, like her nose is running. She's been
peeled the tires as she's going away from,
like,
the church.
Like, they're on the brink of divorce or something, right? no one else fights. And so, but I remember being like, I actually really feel like I need to go. I have obligations that I need to be a part of. And I looked and I think I applied more makeup and was like, okay, we are just going to put a smile on our face and hopefully no one will ask and whatnot. And I remember that night, like we did resolve it in the end and it was really good because God convicted me of a few things that I needed to say sorry to Daniel about. But in the moment, I felt really fake. And nobody has ever put those expectations on me that, you know, they've told me you have to be perfect. But I really felt like that was something like that. If you struggle outside of the church, struggle in your own home. And don't tell people about it unless you want to be gossiped about, unfortunately. So, and I preface saying that is I actually never wanted to be a pastor's wife. This was something that I always felt like growing up, I'm like, no, I'll never marry a pastor because that means I need to be a pastor's wife. And to me, it felt like the expectations were, like I said, you needed to be perfect or you needed to be the person who would be available at any moment and be like, oh, like putting out fires or the person who needs to plug up all the holes that are happening within like the Sunday service, or you had to be the children's pastor or the women's director or, you know, so on and so forth, even though if you don't really feel like those gifts that or you feel like you would thrive. And I'm not saying that doesn't mean that you shouldn't do those things, because I do believe that, you know, there are some seasons where you just need to serve in whatever capacity and you do it unto the Lord, not unto anybody else. Even though if you may, you know, do it with a little bit of grumbling, but, yeah, I think there are so many expectations and I don't want to always to say that they're negative. So I think with that role comes that people are also wanting or maybe assuming that you're a really good listener and that you're really close to God. And so that they want to talk to you and they want to confide in you. And I think that is really to have that rapport with someone right away and maybe not even know them. I think that's a really special gift that God has even given to those people who have the pastor's wife role. It comes with its own difficulties and challenges, but I also think it comes with a lot of beauty in the sense where we've been able to share God's love and good news and gospel with them and seen life transformation happen over time.
Christina, you talking about expectations. The number one comment I hear from all pastors' wives and women who are marrying men who are going into ministry mm-hmm. is being in a fishbowl. I always hear the comparison of living in a fishbowl. How do you manage expectations for yourself, but also for other people? How do you tell people no when it's time to tell people no? How do you tell people, you know, just not today, maybe another day, but just not today? How do you do that without feeling like you're, you know, either letting them down or feeling like you're letting yourself down?
I've learned through experience, sometimes really difficult experiences. I think when I was in high school, I am a people pleaser by nature, which can be really dangerous.
I feel you on a spiritual level there. Yeah. Like, I feel that.
I know. I don't like saying no to people. I don't like being, you know, disappointing people or whatnot. But God allowed me, even in high school, to burn out twice. Like, I was so sick because I was always like, yeah, sure, I'll help you. Yeah, sure, I'll help you. And I really wanted to follow through and I really needed to follow through, even though that would be the detriment of my health or my sleep or, you know, whatever. And so I had to really learn in different stages of my life that I am not your savior, and that by me saying no doesn't mean that I don't love you and doesn't mean that I don't want the best for you and doesn't mean that I won't pray for you, but you need to turn to God in this situation. And I would love to be able to journey with you, but right now that like hands-on being there every single day or whatnot or filling in for this role. No, because I think also a person who's saying yes all the time, like where where are you taking those opportunities from other people to be able to step up and to serve and to struggle and to learn, to, you know, play a different role, or even to learn where they fit in the body of Christ? Because if you're taking all the opportunities and they're maybe seeing it as that you're good at everything, even though you're not, then they might just shy back and be like, oh, no, no, I'm not going to do it. Like, Christina will do it, and she's always done it. And so I'm not going to, you know, I'll just sit here and kind of cheer her on.
Yeah, because one of the things that we need to be aware of is, okay, first for ourselves, who are we looking up to, either consciously or subconsciously, mm-hmm. as the ideal pastor that I want to be, or the ideal pastor's wife that maybe you think you have to be? You know what I'm talking about? Like, we all have our kind of our models of who we are comparing ourselves, or who we are running to, or who we are trying to, I guess, emulate and learn from in that sense. And maybe you're not saying, hey, I want to be like that person. But the fact is, we teach the way that we've been taught. We lead the way that we've been led. We parent the way that we've been parented. I mean, I don't know how many times I've caught myself parenting in a certain manner and being like, I hated it when my parents did this. Why am I doing this? Like, it's not, you know, so that's just how we operate as humans. And if we don't take time to be introspective and to learn why we do things the way we do. And that's why, I mean, I love it when Bible colleges and seminaries, and if, you know, always talk about what is your philosophy of ministry and what is your understanding of success and of ministry, because that's super important, not just for the pastor to have, but for the pastor's spouse to have as well. But on the other hand, here's the thing: every single person in your church also has an image of the pastor that, or the pastor's wife that they are trying to shape you into. Mm-hmm. Right. So they want you to be. So they have this, and it's maybe, and the issue with nostalgia, right, is that nostalgia always overemphasizes the good and de-emphasizes the bad. Mm-hmm. So no, there is no way any human being can ever live up to someone else's nostalgic experiences. Like, no way, because all the negatives are washed away. So understanding those two things, right? Understanding those two things are super important. And then going to what Christina said, you know, in terms of expectations, I would say it's incredibly important to set a culture in your church where the pastor is not the savior, mm-hmm. and the pastor's wife is not the, you know, number two savior. You know, I don't know. I was trying to figure out, is there like some cool word to use? I have no idea. But you know what I'm talking about? Like, how do we do that? Because the more we feed into this, and let's be super vulnerable here, right? Let's be super transparent. If we're to pull the curtain back, right? Like, super, super transparent, it actually feels good to be the pastor. And it feels good to be the pastor's wife.
Oh, who doesn't want to be the superstar?
Yeah, because really, you're the center of attention. Uh-huh. You're needed. Everyone knows you. Who, you know, it's like Ghostbusters, right? Who are you going to call when you're in the hospital, right? The pastor's wife. And, you know, and yes, you send the deacons or the elders or here or there. And, you know, the person in the hospital is like, okay, thank you, I appreciate it. But then the pastor comes, right? And it's like, oh my goodness, like, thank you. Oh, and then they're like, oh, pastor, I know you're so busy. Thank you for taking time out of your schedule, for coming and for praying. You know, here you go. And, you know, let's be honest, it feels good. Like, it feels really mm-hmm. good. And the thing is, the more we feed into that, the more we're actually beholding and setting ourselves up for failure, because we are not the saviors, and there's no way we can ever live up to everyone else's expectations.
So, Daniel, I got a couple of questions for you on this. Other than cultivating that idea in the church, how are some ways that you as a pastor can shut down these expectations the church members have for your wives?
Yeah. So the biggest thing for me, and this is something that I've learned in kind of larger ministry settings that I've served in, that I think is a really important principle that churches of any size need to grab hold of, right? So I think on the one hand, having served in smaller contexts and larger contexts, I think both have their strengths and both have their weaknesses. And there's so much that we can all learn from one another, regardless of context or size. But I think one thing that larger churches tend to do well, not every large church, but larger churches tend to do well, is they tend to have lesser, they tend to place lesser of an expectation on the pastor's wife. Mm-hmm. And that's because, you know, maybe there are no more volunteers and you know, there's just, you know, there's a variety of reasons. And I think one of the biggest reasons pastors' wives, you know, feel like they have to, you know, if the sink is shipping, you got to put your finger in all the holes so that the water doesn't come through, right? So it's like, I feel like a lot of times that's placed on yourself. You place that on yourself mm-hmm. as the pastor or as the pastor's wife. And it's like, if we don't do it, then, you know, what if we lose two families? And if we lose two families, then we're going to lose this much money in tithes and offering. And if that happens, then, you know, and obviously you don't verbally ever say this to anyone, because that's, you wouldn't say losing a family means you lose tithes and offerings, but hey, your livelihood is kind of dependent.
Bread and milk money, you know?
Right? And you're like, oh no, we're not going to go on vacation this year because we just lost 10 families. And you know, it's just, we got to let this person go because of this. And you know, if we're really honest with ourselves, that's kind of what we're thinking behind, mm-hmm. kind of behind or deeper within. And the thing is, the more you do that, the more you build a consumeristic culture where people are like, well, I mean, the pastor's going to do it, or the pastor's wife is going to do it. So one thing that I would challenge you to do, regardless of your church size, is actually let there be gaps and let everyone else feel the weight of the gap. Mm-hmm. And don't expect anything more from your spouse as you would expect from a deacon or an elder or a really highly committed church member. Don't expect more. Now, you should place your spouse at like the highest commitment that you would expect of a church member, right? But I wouldn't expect them to be staff level when they're not.
Yeah.
Right. And in that way, it's like, okay, if those are your expectations, then guard your wife.
Yeah.
You know, don't volunteer her for something. When someone says, oh, where's your wife? And kind of the, you know, the backhanded way that they say it, you know, just say, oh, you know, she's, you know, respond positively, right? You know, we read it in Romans. It's kind of like Romans 12, you know, you're putting coals on there. Oh, you know what? She is at home hanging out with the kids, or I'm here, or, you know, let's say you brought the kids to church and you're like, where's your spouse? Why isn't your wife taking care of the kids? Oh, she's at home reading a book. And I mean, I was so happy that she could take the day off and just read a book or go to the spa or go to this, because man, it just puts in 24 hours a day taking care of the kids and this and that. And you know, speak on her behalf, defend her, and begin creating this kind of culture where, you know, you're not, the church isn't getting a twofer.
Amen.
So Daniel, one more question before we get into the next question. Really, I want to go back to kind of what you mentioned earlier, you know, the dynamic when y'all work together, how it was a dynamic there, but even in just a regular pastor wife relationship, this may shock a lot of the people listening, but there's moments in the church that are just not pleasant. They're hard. They're difficult. You come home, you're like, I don't want to go back again. And your wife, if you're anything like me and my wife, your wife is even more like that, because like anything that comes against me, it's like DEFCON above that, right? That's so if somebody attacks me, wife is just ready to just step in
there,
and hurt somebody.
My boxing gloves in the closet.
I think all wives like that, right? They come to the defense of their
husbands. You're not alone.
Okay. That makes you feel better.
So how can you help your wife in those moments as a pastor? Because they're going to happen.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a fantastic question. And first and foremost, I don't believe there should be any secrets between a husband and a wife. So if someone says something to me, you know, I believe that everything is there and, you know, I'm not going to hide anything from Christina. But the longer that we've been married, I realize there's a difference between not having any secrets and telling everything.
A big difference,
right? So just because you shouldn't have secrets and hide anything from your spouse doesn't mean you should actually share everything. yeah. about the situation because of this, right? Because on the one hand, if someone has attacked you or you're feeling down and it's been a rough day and you just share, you know, a little snippet of the roughness of the day or the conflict that you had at your deacon's meeting or your board meeting, or this, you know, like you just kind of share a little bit of that. Here, this is the difference. You were there. You heard the positives. You heard the negatives. Mm-hmm. You had the context and you decompressed hopefully on the drive home and you're kind of processing this. When when you're home and you just tell your spouse 1 minute of something that you've experienced for the last 5 hours, there's no way that they're going to be able to process it the way that you have. And they're always going to take your side, right? And I believe that spouses should always take their side, right? Even if their spouse is wrong, you got to, give them the benefit of the doubt, take their side, and then begin helping them process mm-hmm. so that if, let's say, you shouldn't be taking their side, your spouse is the first one to kind of realize that and they self-admit that maybe they were in the wrong, Because you don't necessarily want to have an environment where there's strife at home. So now, you got to be really careful in what I'm saying. And I don't want any of your listeners to misconstrue what I'm saying, because the last thing that I'd want to happen is for there to be hiddenness and for there, for that to like go into sin and that go into a division. And then the wife or the spouse feel like the husband's holding something back from them and not telling the whole story, and there's a lot of ways that I think the enemy can kind of misconstrue what I said.
Yeah.
Right. So I just kind of want to repeat, you shouldn't ever hold secrets or hold anything back from your spouse, but there's a time and season for what you say.
Yeah.
And maybe you're going to share a little bit now and you're going to share a lot more later on. And if your spouse prods and says, no, I need to know more, I want to help you, you got to pray. It's double, it's two-year listening, right? You got to listen to your spouse, but you also got to be praying to the Lord and say, okay, Father, how much should I be sharing right now? Mm-hmm. Like, don't talk about the conflict right before dinner, right? Don't talk about the conflict right before the kids are, or as the kids are trying to go to bed, or let's say both of you had a really rough day. Just don't talk about it. Then figure out a good time to process. Otherwise you're going to be just like 11:30 at night. Hey honey, how's your day? Well, actually I had the worst deacon meeting ever. This person said this, and then all of a sudden, adrenaline shoots and both of you have a bad night. So
some late night emails happening.
Oh, totally. Totally. Right. So in those situations, there's a time and season for everything, but there always has to be that foundation of transparency and honesty.
All right, well, as we get ready to wrap up tonight, Christine, I want you to kind of leave us with a little encouragement as to how me as a church member or a staff mm-hmm. member or anybody within the church can encourage pastors' wives.
I love that. I think in a broader sense, I think we always tend to mention the things that are negative about people. Even though we could think 25 positive things about a person, just that one negative thing, and it might just be a little thing or whatnot, but they might take it wrongly. And just saying that instead of the 25 or 30 positive things that you're saying could really hurt someone. So especially with the pastor's wife, I think that going up to them and being able to compliment them or really ask them how they're doing, and not just your typical your husband's sermon was really good today. obviously we love hearing that, but we're also our
James
own
really
person.
Loves hearing that.
So, one of those, right, of being, even maybe just recognizing the way that she is able to balance, her husband being away on Sundays and being able to still get the kids ready and, for church. How are you on time? Didn't your husband leave an hour ago? And I know there's so much that happens within the day or in the morning, amazing that you could make it. High five to you, pastor's wife. And then those little things, I think, really make it a big difference. Mm. I would say as the church and as the staff, and this one church did this to us and I really appreciate it. And I'll mention it. So during the interview process, I think whether it's the elders or, the other staff members or whatnot that are doing the interview, ask the wife how she sees God calling her to serve in this church and where her boundaries are. So, for example, I told that church that asked me that, I said, I love to serve in this area. I feel really gifted in this. And they were looking for a children's pastor at the time. And I made sure to say, like, I am not interested in serving in that capacity. I don't feel called right now to be your children's pastor. And they kind of looked at me and I'm like, and no, I'm not interested in being your interim. I will be your best volunteer. I will help out and, I'll do the puppets or whatnot. But I am not going to be in that role. And so I feel like right off the bat, they were very aware of sort of my boundaries and the way that God has gifted me, and really I was able to serve in that capacity. Another way would be allow time for the pastor and family to recoup. Yeah. So for example, a church blessed the senior pastor with the opportunity to pass his pulpit duties to other staff members or to other guests during the summer. And so he was preaching 3 times a week. And so that's a lot. And I know not every church can do this, but that was, I think, such a blessing to be able to be like, there's other staff members that are able to do this. And there's some wonderful resources that we can tap into just so that pastor doesn't have to take, that 20 hours a week or something to prepare and can spend a little bit more time at home taking care of his family. I think another way to be able to support our pastors' wives are allow time for them to reconnect and to be refreshed. And a lot of time that means, I would think, to like be somewhere else. And so, for example, a church, or a district that we were a part of, they did like a prayer retreat, and the churches were paying for their pastors and their wives and the staff members to go on this prayer retreat. And they had some like great worship and some time. It wasn't like 8 a.m. to like midnight, basically, where it was all like, listen to this sermon, do this, you have to go to this workshop. There was definitely some of that, but also a time of
refreshment. That's what we do
as pastors. Yeah. That's always what we do. So, and it was in like a beautiful location and in nature and stuff. So we were always thankful for that. And then the last thing I think would be to have a church culture where everyone can be real, including the pastor and including the pastor's wife, and show grace when she makes mistakes. Because that happens. I mean, as much as you would like her to maybe even gloss over your mistakes, she doesn't want, and I was specifically like, I'm aware of my mistakes. It's okay. I feel them. But for someone to be like, look at what you did, or look at what you said, like, I don't want to have to feel like I can't be myself. So it takes some time to love on her. And also, I think an important fact is respect the fact that she probably will not be your best friend, and she will probably not reveal her deepest, darkest secrets to you as a congregational member. And it's not because she doesn't like you, and it's not because, she is the most mysterious person in the world, but probably because, and I would say for my life, making the mistake that treating the congregation people or members as basically my like jumping ground, like I want to say everything to them, and then coming back and being like, I really probably shouldn't have shared that with them, because now they might see my husband in a different light, and that's not what I wanted them to think of him, because he is wonderful and whatnot. So I've really had to learn to look for people who I really confide in, who are outside of the church, and who, like, and I have some like women mentors and, pastors' wives mentors or whatnot that are older and have kind of lived through it. And so being able to talk to them about, the ins and outs of ministry, rather than talking to the congregation. Mm-hmm.
Christina, this isn't on the paper. What's one way a pastor can be aware of his wife in ministry and encourage her?
I think the fact that seeing her for her, and I guess in twofolds, like one is she may have been adopted into this role. For example, like if you marry a pastor and all of a sudden you become a pastor's wife. And so being able to have those honest discussions of what that looks like, in each different church, and also what that looks like in the expectations between each other. And also I think of, I talked about boundaries in ourselves, but I think boundaries within the pastor and pastor's wife, like when are we going to talk about this, or, you know, we're not going to talk about this. And this is sort of, you know, home is home. Home is our safe haven. Home is when we just really relax and feel like we can just be ourselves and not like the pastor and pastor wife role. I mean, I think that kind of looks different from every couple for every couple. But I personally want Daniel to treat me as Christina, not Christina, aka pastor's wife, because like I said, that's a part of me, but that's not all of me. Like that's kind of, you would say, like your occupation, so to speak. Yeah. But that isn't who necessarily I am as an entirety.
Awesome. Yeah, it's, I think this has been great. Before we move to the plugs of the week, Daniel, do you want to add anything?
No, I think Christina put it well. I liked that last question because it was cool for me to hear what she said. So,
yeah, and you're doing it well. So it isn't like, oh, we're going to.
I was going to let my wife answer, but I wasn't ready to receive it. So she can just tell me later. Is there any plugs that you guys want to give to the listeners?
Yeah. I mean, we would be honored if you would take a listen to our podcast. You've kind of heard our heart, and for us, the topics are marriage, parenting, faith, and everything in between. And sometimes we talk about things like how to not hate your in-laws as one of our episodes. And then we go to practical things like travel hacks for road trips. Mm-hmm. All the way to conflict and money and marriage. And so we're just really trying to be a blessing and a resource to just marriages and families, regardless of where someone sits in their relationship with God. So that's in between, that's imbetween.org. And you can just look that up either on the website or in any podcasting app, and we'll show up.
And I'll probably tag that on the Facebook post. That way, if anybody cool. wants to see, they can jump out there on it. Christina, awesome. Do you have anything?
I did want to just go back quickly to what Daniel was talking about. I know we're kind of ending, but I was like, oh, I want to say something about this part. Where Daniel was saying about like no secrets, but being able to be, you know, wise about that. I think especially when congregational members come up to you and be like, I think your wife should be like this, or, you know, I expected your wife to do this and this is how she disappointed me. I think in that way that a pastor and a husband can be a really good shield. I mean, like, thank you for your thoughts. And that's that. And then you can pray and be like, okay, is there anything in there that, you know, we need to be able to address? Is it a character issue? Is it something that, you know, prayerfully that God needs to reveal to her? Or is it just trash and that needs to be flushed down the toilet right then and there? So, yeah.
Well, Christina, earlier you mentioned it. Now, you may not know right off the top of your head, but you mentioned an article. You kind of read a part from that article. Do you know what article that was?
I don't know it right off the top of my head. I think it was like Pastor's Wife Care or something like that. But yeah, I can find it for you.
You can find it. Get Daniel to send it to me, and I'll put in the show notes. I think that might be beneficial for the listeners as well. Jamie, do you have anything to?
Well, I have to redeem myself because last time we recorded, I showed up completely unprepared to do any of this. So, my plug is not specifically for pastors' wives, but I believe it can be very beneficial. It's for women overall, and that is a Practical Theology for Women by Wendy Alsop. I actually got this book from my wife for, I believe it was for our anniversary, and she has told me multiple times how wonderful it has been for her. It's really, it is what it says it is, practical theology for women. So it is very practical, but also kind of helps, because there's kind of this idea that women aren't supposed to be very theological, I guess you could say. In some areas, I've heard that before, and I would dispute that. So mm-hmm. it's very good for women, and obviously very good for pastors' wives as well.
Awesome. We'll have to look that up.
All right. That's cool. Sarah, do you got one to add?
Yeah. Both of mine are by Gloria Furman. The first one is called, it's actually called The Pastor's Wife, and it's a great book.
You actually found one for pastor's wives.
Well, I'm just fancy. Yeah. It's a really good one.
You showed me up. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's a really good one. It kind of hits on everything that really we've talked about tonight, but it hits it in such a humorous and honest and open way that's really refreshing. And the other one by Gloria Furman, because I just want to be her friend, is called Missional Motherhood. Obviously, this isn't specifically for pastor's wives. It's for really any woman who who's just trying to figure her life out. It's for, you know, mothers who have children. It's for spiritual mothers. It's for mothers of older children, younger children, whatever. But it's fantastic in it. And it just kind of sheds light on how we as women are just natural nurturers and how we can mm-hmm. use that natural gift that God has blessed us with to bless others. And so it's a fantastic book. I encourage anyone to read it. But yeah, those are mine. That's awesome. All I have. That's
awesome. Mine real quick. First few are just recommendations in general. For any husband out there, but especially pastors, set up a regular date time with your wife and let that be that time where you spend with them. No ministry, no children, nothing like that. And just spend time with one another. Second thing is, I know Daniel's done said it several times, but I can't push it enough. Check out the podcast they do. If you're anything like me, you have different podcasts that you listen to that are about different topics. And guys, y'all made the list for the family and parenting one. You're the only one I listen to like that. And then a recommendation, and Daniel, I do have to confess, I have not had the chance to read it yet. And if you want to blame somebody, you can blame New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary for giving me too much stuff to read. But Daniel,
I think it's reading in one of the classes, though.
Oh. Not in one I'm taking. Unless it's Hebrew. I don't think I'm learning Hebrew in your book.
Maybe you could get it translated, honey. Yeah.
But guys, I just want to encourage you. Like I said, I haven't read it yet, but I've heard nothing but good things. And I've heard a lot about the book. But it's No Silver Bullets by Daniel Lim. And I laughed earlier because you talked about how there's no silver bullets and something about pastor's wife. And I was like, it's just his catchphrase, I think.
It's his lingo.
But I just want to recommend y'all grab that. It's actually going to be on my reading list this summer. Even though I'm going to take systematic theology during the summer, I think I could fit it in there somewhere. I think it'll be good. But guys, I really enjoyed the podcast. And before we get off here, do y'all want to add anything?
No, we're grateful for you guys and for your ministry. Keep chugging along.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Thanks for the encouragement. This has definitely been the longest podcast episode that we've done.
I think we're over the 25-minute mark.
Just a little, not bad. And a later podcast.
For all the listeners out, we hope this has been an encouragement to you and your family. And we just want you to know that we are praying for you and your families, for your wives. For you wives out there, we're praying for you. And we hope God continues to use you in the ministry that he has placed you in. And this has been the Everyday Ministry Podcast. We're a podcast where everyday ministers get together to discuss ministry.
If you're encouraged by what you hear, please go like our Facebook page, share the episodes, and rate the podcast on iTunes. Don't forget that a new episode drops every first and third Mondays. Our prayer is that these episodes are an encouragement to you and that you would be faithful in the ministry that God has placed you in. I'm sick of running to the wind. This drags my back, but I'm too stuck, kicking, screaming. Gotta get out of here fast. I'm lead to you, sitting off.
and all the roads that lead to you. Setting off on a one-way train to a place where they know my. Heading back to my roots and all the way.